JN. Morning.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nathan Bays, with my co-counsel, Lauren Connor, on behalf of JN. We're also counsel of record in the linked case in RE-TML. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, okay. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Unless the Court has any questions, I'm going to begin by addressing the video issue here. The question here is whether an individual facing among the lengthiest possible detentions under the Involuntary Treatment Act has the right to be physically present in the courtroom with the judge making that decision, or whether the county can effectively force every respondent in a particular hospital into a sort of virtual court by which they could be detained up to 180 days entirely by video. We've presented arguments, statutory and constitutional bases, for that right. But I submit, Your Honors, that the Court can and should decide the case exclusively on the statutory basis. The Court need not reach the constitutional basis here. Statute provides very clearly that the respondent shall be present at the proceedings. When the legislature drafted this in 1973, it was not contemplating a virtual court appearing virtually by video. And although the ITA statute has been amended constantly, this has not been amended.
In the briefing, the appellant talks a lot about the percentage taken by ambulance versus taken by van, which I think goes to the due process analysis more than the statutory analysis. Who transports – what does the record show about who does the van transportation?
The record, I believe, shows that the hospitals themselves do the van transportation.
So in this case, Navos has a van that would have brought JN to the Harborview?
Indeed. And prior to LMPR 1.8B – that was the practice. Navos would take the respondents who did not present as either medically unsound or behaviorally out of control. They would be in a van, no restraints, no gurneys, and they would proceed to Harborview. They would be in a waiting room and without restraints or gurneys. They would walk into the courtroom, have their trial, and then depending on the results, they would be vanned back to Navos. So I'd like to briefly address what I see as three of the state's primary arguments and three sort of tenets of the trial court's holding in this case.
Well, first, before you do that, sure. let's go back to where you were
sure.
you were going prior to Judge Turkey's inquiry. So I take it from your comment immediately preceding that to determine the statutory question, you believe that we should give the statute the meaning that it was given by the legislature in 1973 when it passed it.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, and in the context
being,
of the NTA.
Being more specific, we'd be looking for is the intent and the understanding of those members of the 1973 legislature who voted yes on the bill, right? Those who voted no don't matter, right?
I suppose you could look at that,
Your Honor. Yeah. In order to determine intent of those legislators, we would have to discern their understanding of the words they used, right?
You could, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. What do we have available to us, looking back at the 1973 legislature, from which we can seek to discern the understanding of those legislators in 1973 who voted yes on this bill?
I don't know that there's anything on the record to that extent. I think that the court can look at other uses of the term in the ITA statute.
Maybe we can do that. But we have prior legislation, right? We have those statutes starting with statehood that implicated this same process, right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so we can look at that, because that's something we can assume that the 1973 legislators would have been aware of.
Yes.
Especially the law that they were seeking to amend, right?
And the ITA statute.
Yeah, right? So is when we look at those things then, are you aware, can you help me with, whether there is anything from the bill that was effective upon statehood through the several iterations of that bill to where it lay in 1973 that would indicate that some form of presence other than physical presence is what was envisioned by those legislators who voted yes in 1973?
I'm not aware of anything, Your Honor, although this particular provision in the ITA statute emphasizes protections afforded to individuals.
Well, that's in the statement of intent.
Yes.
That's in the statement of intent. We can certainly look at that. That's what their intent was.
Critical,
right?
Yes.
But that's intent as to the statute as a whole.
Yes.
Yeah. I realize that I'm using your time. You also realize that I'm a decision maker, and
absolutely.
So this is probably well spent.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I do.
We could also look at perhaps other statutes that existed at the time to see if it was routine for a litigant, a party, to be considered present when they were not physically present. That's something that the legislature would be aware of, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I assume yes.
Is there any indication that in 1973 such statutes existed?
I do not believe so.
How about court rules? If there were court rules that indicated that it was routine for parties to be considered present when they were not physically present in 1973, that's something that the legislature would be aware of, right?
Could look at. I would look at CR 43, which I believe was in place at the time. I'm not.
Okay, and what would it tell us?
CR 43 places a strong presumption on in-person testimony and says, absent good cause or compelling circumstances, you know, we're assuming that testimony takes place in the courtroom.
But that's testimony that includes witness testimony, right?
That includes witness testimony, and here we're
talking about the party.
The actual party who is facing a tremendous potential deprivation of liberty, yes.
Okay, so whether a party would be required to be present is not necessarily the same question as whether a witness would be required to be present.
It's not the same question, but I think that you could extrapolate from the idea that
But wouldn't there be more reason to require a party to be present than a mere witness?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Right?
You could extrapolate that if it's important to have a witness in the in the courtroom to testify, then it's at least as important to have the respondent who could be detained up to 180 days in the courtroom for the proceedings.
You'll have 3 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Jocelyn McCurtain, and I represent the respondent, the State of Washington, in this matter. There are three issues before the Court today, and I will first begin with the statutory interpretation of the statute and whether or not respondents need to be physically present within the courtroom.
Is the State's position that the term present is ambiguous?
No, Your Honor. We think that it's sufficiently broad to encompass also having video hearings as well as the individual being physically present within the courtroom. When we look at defining...
Let's see if we have a common understanding as to whether there was a common understanding.
Sure.
Do you agree that the inquiry is with regard to the understanding of the legislators who voted in favor of the bill in 1973?
I think that's certainly part of what we need to take into consideration.
Well, why was that only part of it? Isn't that the whole kit and caboodle? We have a constitutional form of government. They had elections. It was in all the papers. Some people won and others lost. Those that won took an oath, and then they took a vote. And when we as judges declare the law, that doesn't mean we make it up. It means we discern what was voted on, and then we announce it. Isn't that what we're doing here?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
So the focus is the 1973 legislators, right?
Yes.
Okay. And in order to determine their intent, we have to determine their understanding of the words they use, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll ask you the same question. What facts can we look at to determine what the understanding was of the 1973 legislature with regard to the phrase, shall be present at such proceeding?
And I think that we can look to the remainder of the statute as well. And nowhere under 7105 does it state that a patient has to be physically present within the courtroom at Harborview Hospital. In addition to that,
well, that would be a silly thing to have in a statute because there's no Harborview Hospital in Assotin County, right?
Sure, Your Honor.
Okay. So why don't we talk about things that would actually inform our discussion? Here we have something that's in the statute that says shall be present at such proceeding. So it doesn't matter where the proceeding is. It says shall be present. What would you point me to for me to gain serenity in the notion that in 1973, the legislators who voted yes thought that not being physically present was being present?
We can also look to the remainder of the statute in that there's no affirmative duty to bring an individual to the hospital, regardless of whether or not Harborview Hospital is actually present.
Well, let's talk about that then, because at the time of statehood, the territorial statute, the phrasing it used with regard to the person who was accused of insanity, that's what we did back then, we accused people of insanity, it used the phrase, shall be brought before the court, okay? And then that continued on, and then in 1973, we have different language used, and it says shall be present at such proceeding. Why would I conclude that shall be present at such proceeding means something different from shall be brought before the court?
I think that the court can turn simply to the language used. So previously, if it stated that an individual shall be brought before the court, and then there was a change made in 1973 where it indicates shall be present, it's the state's position that shall be present encompasses contemporaneous presence at another place.
Yeah, I understand that's your position. Why would I believe that that's what someone in the legislature in 1973 thought?
There's a clear distinction between what was initially there, which shall be present in the courtroom, versus what is now in the statute of shall be present for the proceeding.
Shall be present at such proceeding. At.
Correct.
That's a physical, at is a physical location, right?
Yes,
okay.
It can be.
So what happened? What do you point me to that informs that view that somehow the legislature adopted a different view of how this should work in 1973? What can you point me to other than the language?
Your Honor, I think I can't point to something else. However, what I can point
to. Were there other statutes at the time in 1973 that provided for video hearings for parties instead of parties being physically present?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Were there court rules that provided for that?
I know that opposing counsel cited to 43, Rule 43, of actually having an individual be present or potentially be present via phone. That does show that there are rules that allow for individuals to be contemporaneously present from a different location as long as the court deems it appropriate for
them to do that. Did that apply to parties in 1973?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe that it does have to do with witness testimony.
Okay. So we have a statute that sets forth the intent of the legislature, which is to secure the rights of the people affected, because there's a concern that there's been an overabundance of paternalism expressed towards these poor souls. And for some reason that we cannot identify, part of that is to take away the requirement that they be in the same place as the judge. Replace it with an allowance that they can be somewhere else and express that finding, that belief, by using the words, shall be present at such proceeding. That's the opinion you want us to issue, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Do you think telephonic appearance would be adequate, in-person appearance,
Your
under
Honor,
the statute?
This court in Division One under Plunkett actually found that having telephonic testimony elsewhere was essentially being present. Now, we can take that a step further. What we have here is up to date. That was back in 1990, Your Honor.
Okay, but we have had statutes intervene that have authorized the court to take telephonic testimony and to take video testimony. In 73... the technology wasn't there for video testimony, and it just wasn't thought of to have the parties appear, especially if you've got any confrontation issues, but any mandates, to be there. So how could a legislature who wasn't aware of the potential of video testimony have intended that video testimony would be utilized?
I think the intention of the legislature was to make it sufficiently broad. The term shall be present allows for it to be broad enough to allow individuals to be present contemporaneously via video. We can look at the definitions cited by both parties as to what present actually means. JN cited to Black's Law Dictionary specifically stating that the in attendance or not elsewhere, but when we look at the remainder of that definition, it also means now existing at hand, being considered, or now under discussion. The legislature...
My point is, I agree, we could interpret the language that broadly, but there was nothing possible technologically for the legislature to have contemplated the use of the technology at that point in time. So back to Judge Dwyer's question, what could that legislature have intended this statute to do?
The legislature at the time intended to make sure that these cases were heard on their merits, that they were heard efficiently, that we were providing individuals with mental health treatment quickly and efficiently and hearing their cases, like I've stated several times, in an efficient manner. Allowing for that particular statement to be broad furthers the legislative intent to allow these individuals to receive mental health treatment in a quick fashion throughout the court system. If we continue to require patients to be brought in via gurney, which JN is requesting in this case, we would have a backlog of cases. They wouldn't be heard quickly.
Well, let's ask the $64,000 question. Why didn't somebody ask the legislature for authority?
And, Your Honor, I don't have an answer to that.
So how does the state respond to the argument that only a small percentage of people are actually brought in gurneys, 10%? Was that a finding the trial court made, or what weight should we give to that?
Your Honor, it was not a finding that the trial court made, and we would ask that the court does place little weight on that 10%. But even if the court does take that 10% into consideration, 10% of bringing individuals into the hospital at Harborview Hospital makes it so that individuals are not having their hearings heard in a timely fashion. It requires individuals to be lined up into the back of Harborview Hospital waiting for their cases to be heard. Regardless of its 10% of an 80-person calendar, that's still a significant amount of people that are having to wait in an 8-hour time frame to have their cases heard before the court.
This case well illustrates 21st century decision making, and it's fully explained in your briefing. There was a legitimate problem. The stakeholders were convened. A consultant was hired. Consumer satisfaction surveys were conducted. And then a decision was reached. Nobody went to the legislature and said, these are our problems. Can you help us solve them? You may want to get prepared for that.
Your Honor, we would ask that the court does affirm the trial court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to briefly address a few of the points that were brought up during opposing counsel's argument. The first was Judge Dwyer, as you mentioned, this is not just shall be present for or during, it shall be present at. At is an important preposition here. At denotes location. You also mentioned an overabundance of paternalism. You know, I haven't seen this argument refuted more forcefully or eloquently than our Supreme Court did in Quesnel, which we've cited in our brief, where the court effectively said, you know, we need to be very careful and skeptical of depriving these individuals of important rights under the guise that this is merely a civil case or that this is somehow therapeutic. Opposing counsel referenced Plunkett. Plunkett dealt with a prison disciplinary proceeding. Liberty interest was not at issue, and the subject of the disciplinary proceeding was with the judicial officer.
Let me ask quickly about the sentence here. The clause that everybody's focusing on is the person shall be present at such proceeding, but then it continues, comma, which shall in all respects accord with the constitutional guarantees of due process of law and the rules of evidence except for certain exceptions.
Yes,
does that equate the statutory right to be present to the due process right to be present or not?
I think it is an enhanced protection. I believe that it is a statutory protection, and then it says also to the extent that this is going to be the statute is going to be interpreted, there's also a constitutional right that they recognized.
Now, isn't it when you just read it, doesn't it say the hearing has to comply with constitutional requirements?
Yes.
And the party has right to be at that hearing.
Yes.
It's talking about two different things.
Yes, both, yes. Regarding the 10% number, opposing counsel said to give that little weight. I'll just note for the record, this actually was their evidence. The state submitted this in support of their argument, and it was inconvenient that this particular figure was in it, but that's in the record in the TML case at CP215. JN was not requesting to be transported by gurney. JN was requesting to be present at the proceeding. There's no showing that he would have required a gurney. As we said, 90% didn't. And there was never a finding that he would have required a gurney.
That's on the that just deals with the due process argument.
I understand, Your Honor. And then finally, I do want to address this argument that somehow the sky is falling. It's not falling. Our court in INRI DW held that, inconvenience with scheduling or resources is not a basis for depriving these individuals of their rights. Pierce County ran out of beds. It started putting people in border hospitals and said, we got to do this because we got to detain these people.
To me, the significance of this is even when you're addressing an urgent problem and doing it well, you have to remember there's a separation of powers issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you have to remember that 40 years ago the world was different. And think about the time frame and the context. We all tend to live in the world that we're in at the moment and think about how technology is and how things operate. Decisions are made in the context of the times then, too. And the temporal issue was not adequately addressed in this briefing, and I think that's one of the lessons of this case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
We would simply ask that the court enforce the right to be present at the proceeding. Thank you.